This episode of the Punk News Podcast is sponsored by nothing, because no one gives us any money to do this.
Give us money.
This is episode 273.
Give us money.
Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in my basement out in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's program, Mr. John Gentile out of the city of brotherly love. Is that right?
Indeed. And I would say the city of brotherly love is a wonderful place to go to travel to. And be sure to visit City Hall as well as the wonderful dining district down in South Philadelphia. Be sure to visit Benjamin Franklin's house in Philadelphia, only $17.95 per person.
What's in his house?
Probably a lot of old beds of chicks that he seduced, because Ben Franklin was quite the ladies' man, despite being bald, overweight, and just generally weird. But, so, I mean, if anything, that proves for the typical org-core punker, there's still hope.
Hope for us all. And also joining us out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel.
The land of no hope.
Ooh.
No,
that's harsh.
You know, sometimes it is. And then, you know, sometimes people get lucky here. We get a lot of people coming here from that are aspiring screen actors and screenwriters or whatever. And most of them don't make it. And it's a harsh reality.
Ricky, did you have a rough day today or something?
It was a rough day on Punk News. Gonna be honest, it was tough.
Actually, you're right. It was a rough day on Punk News. It was. Today was...
All right, we'll get to the reasons why this week's kind of sucky in a minute. Before we do, let's try to touch off with something positive here. John, or maybe, I don't know, I haven't actually read them, but, you know, hopefully positive. John, what's in the mailbag?
Let's reach into our big burlap sack mailbag, first of all, and this is from Maurice. Maurice says, this one's for Adam. Adam, I love when you play Canadian music on the podcast. I feel like for the country we are, America, he means Canada. I feel like for Canada, even though we're Canadians, America dominates the music conversation when Canada puts out way more than its fair share of great punk rock bands. Please keep focusing on our national treasures. Good work, Adam, from Maurice.
Yeah.
This one.
Fuck other countries. Wow, no, thank you. I don't know. I like that people appreciate that. That's been my weird mission as far as punk news goes. I mean, like, I've been doing it for long enough that at some point I had to figure out, like, what's my return for doing this? Because punk news doesn't make any money or anything like that. So, why do I do it? Like, of what use am I to anyone? And to a degree, I'm not that useful to the world, like posting like Bouncing Souls tour dates. Like, people can find those. Like, I'll gladly will. But that's probably not my purpose in life. But there's a lot of times where I can take like smaller Canadian bands that no one in the US audience has heard about and actually talk about them and expose them to people that wouldn't have otherwise known them. So, like, that's my thing. That's what I can do where I actually feel like I've made a difference today.
You are a tastemaker.
Well, I'm just trying to help. I mean, it's either that or, like, you know, help the poor or donate to charity, and I ain't doing any of that shit. So, you know, I'll talk about, you know, talk about, like, fucking dilly-dally, and that's what I'll do.
This one's from Cody. He says, and this is in reference to Ceremony covering Oasis. We talked about that, I think, two podcasts ago. Cody says, does John realize how awesome Oasis is? Oasis is everything that was good about the 90s. It was radio rock that had a brain. No, they weren't the next Beatles or the next Ramones, but they were an excellent band, especially considered next to the bands of their era. As to Ceremony, have you considered the chance that Ceremony didn't cover GWAR out of respect to the band. Maybe Ceremony didn't know much about Gwar and wanted to leave the honor, as you would put it, of playing Gwar to a band that had a more personal connection. Maybe they didn't want to seem opportunistic. Love the podcast. I listen every week. Signed, Cody.
John, where do you stand on the Blur versus Oasis war that everyone seemed to wage in the 90s?
Oh, I didn't care.
I mean, I was listening to ska at the time, so I don't know. But
honestly, I think if I heard a Blur song, I would know what it is, but I couldn't tell you a Blur song off the top of my head. I do know Oasis has Wonderwall, Champagne Supernova, and one other song.
Yeah, that's... It has those songs for sure. I feel like having completely sat out of that of a lot of the Britpop era when it was happening. My tastes these days make me want to lean towards Blur. Not really that I really know all that much about them, but just like. I know that, like, what's the Blur guy's name?
Damon Albarn,
right? I mean, he was in the good, the bad, and the Queen that had Paul Simonon from The Clash in it. So,
he's Mick Jones for a brief while.
Oh, all right, cool. So yeah, he's more tangentially related to the things that I, you know, put a lot of thought into. My only, you know, not having listened to Oasis in any serious way, they just strike me as a band that was just fighting in the press a lot, which I'm sure is completely reductive and not really the case.
That's kind of
that's not really their legacy, but hey, that's what I think about. Also, at one point I was in a van going somewhere with a bunch of kids when I was in high school, and there was this kid sitting in the back of the van listening to Champagne Supernova on headphones and singing it loudly and out of tune, and it has forever filled me with hate.
Someday you will find us caught between the doo-doo like a champagne supernova in the sky. Speaking of Mick Jones and Paul Simonon, this is from someone who didn't sign the email. They said, when is the Sandinista podcast, guys?
It's right after the other concept podcast that we just discussed before this show started.
We were supposed to do a Beatles podcast at some point.
We were.
We have all sorts of. Were we?
Yeah.
Oh no, this was the Ricky has never heard the Beatles podcast, right?
No, this. Yeah, I mean that was like I think I made a I slammed Yoko and one other podcast, and then we're like, we got to do a new podcast just about the Beatles.
Mm. Yeah, there's lots of things that we could do. We should do the Sandinista.
The problem is we got to push news for an entire week, which I guess we could do, you know.
Well, after this week, it's going to be depressing to keep talking about news. So
We'll do Sandinista next week.
Next? Oh, we need prep, John. We need research.
I've got ideas. Okay, listen. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Let's jump right into the news, first of all, or at least a precursor. David Bowie, he's going to put out a new album. It's going to be 7 tracks, and it's going to have jazz musicians and David Bowie playing. I think that's cool. Adam White, Ricky, are you guys David Bowie fans?
I'm a casual one. I like the grittier stuff. I mean, I really do like...
Wait.
I mean, like, I like, you know, punk... I mean, punk rock in general, not like his grittier stuff, but I think he does play. He has played a major role in the punk scene, so I do, you know, tend to check out his stuff every once in a while. But I'm not like a diehard fan or anything like that.
I have the weakest David Bowie fandom in the world that real Bowie fans would probably think is completely pathetic. Which is to say,
Adam, I really love Adam. Can you repeat that? You cut out a little bit.
Oh, did I? Yeah. Sorry. There was, you know, solar flares. I was going to say, no, I have like probably like the most pathetic David Bowie fandom. And anyone that, you know, is a serious fan has gone deeper than me, which is to say, I really love, you know, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. And, you know, I've listened to that and, you know, the few albums that surrounded that era, you know, Diamond Dogs, Aladdin Sane, stuff like that, you know, quite a bit. But I have no depth as far as his catalog. It was one of those things where, like, there was a time where a lot of bands that I listened to were covering a lot of Bowie. And I was like, all right, I got to get on this. And this was one of these things that I did when I had, like, no life in university and sitting in a dorm room. And I really got into Ziggy Stardust. I mean, as you should, because it's amazing. But I didn't, you know, I couldn't tell you what he's done in the last 10 years. And I don't say that to be derivative or derisive. What am I trying to say? Fuck, I can't talk.
Divisive?
Divisive? I'm not trying to slag Mr. Bowie. I just have been ignorant.
Well, listen, I'm a pretty big Bowie fan. He actually put out an album called The Next Day about 2 years ago. Great later day Bowie album. Great. But I'm a huge fan of I'm a huge fan of his 70s work, his early 80s work, and his most current work. His late 70s stuff is mind-blowingly awesome. Station to Station, Low, Lodger, Heroes, Super Creeps, fantastic, amazing avant-garde albums. Those actually were a lot of those were produced with Brian Eno, famous English producer, and Robert Fripp of King Crimson plays guitar on a lot of those. Station to Station is the album. But here's why I bring this up. So, you know, it was Fest this past week, and for Fest, we gave away three tickets. And, I mean, a Fest ticket, that's a pretty valuable thing. That's like, what, $300, Adam, a Fest ticket?
It's up there. It's expensive.
Okay. So we had three. On Punk News, we give away stuff once in a while. And usually when I do giveaways, I'll say, send us an email about why you think you should win. The reason I do that is because, A, I want someone that actually wants it to win, not just someone that enters contests. But also, I don't want, like, some asshole to win, you know? So I figure if you send me an email and say, why should you win? If you're a nice person, then you're more likely to win than if you're like, just give me a ticket or something like that. And so... But of course, the flip side of that, though, which I learned with this Fest giveaway when we gave away three tickets, is I had so many sob stories, like people say, like telling me all the horrible things that are happening in their life and why they should get a Fest ticket because they just got through all these horrible things in their life, and I felt like I had to like pick three people from a lot of people that had just like horrible things that happened to. I won't even mention them because that probably won't be a nice thing to do. But Adam and Ricky, I got 50 emails of just. It was rough.
Like the only place I can get my dialysis is in Gainesville.
essentially, like, I've been on dialysis for the last 18 months. Going to Fest will save my life because I need the emotional pick me up, like that kind of stuff. I'm like, oh my god! And I only had three to give away, and so I don't know how we're gonna do contests in the future. Like, I don't want assholes to win. But on the other hand, I don't know if I want to have to pick the three winners when we have more than three people that probably should win, if you know what I'm saying. So I don't know what we're going to do in the future. But anyway, so I picked three winners, and the three winners sent me nice emails, and I said, okay, these are nice people, you know, I'll pick them. Basically what I did, I filtered down through all the nice emails, and what by nice I mean not ones like you're an asshole or just give me a ticket or I want a ticket. Like, people say, oh man, I would really appreciate it if I won, and then I essentially randomly picked from the nice people. But one of the nice people, literally the next day after I gave him a ticket, he went on the Bowie article and was ragging on Punk News for saying, why are you posting about David Bowie? David Bowie has nothing to do with Punk. This should not be here. And I'm thinking, dude, I just gave you a $300 ticket yesterday, and you're talking shit on me today? I couldn't believe it. Like, is there no loyalty? Or if not loyalty, is there no gratitude? I didn't send him an email because what can I do? But I thought that was exceptionally rude. But it also brings up a greater point. Perhaps, and I hate playing the old man card, but perhaps to guys like you and me, Adam, perhaps punk rock is something different than it is to the younger generation. And here's why. I mean, to me, David Bowie and punk rock are intertwined. David Bowie is profoundly influential on The Clash, profoundly influential on Iggy Pop, profoundly influential on Crass, mind you. David Bowie is... Black Flag guys were big David Bowie fans. The Ramones were big David Bowie fans. Joey Ramone actually was inspired to start a glam rock band by David Bowie before he was in the Ramones. Bowie is extremely influential on punk rock. But I was thinking, maybe to me, punk rock is wild, daring, usually sonically aggressive, weird music. To me, the point of punk rock is to not be nice. Is that Darth Vader? Adam, do you hear that?
Yeah, I do. So everyone, an interesting factoid about tonight's Punk News podcast is that Ricky's computer broke, so he's recording on a phone, which probably means he's breathing into the phone.
Am I breathing into the phone?
Well, you breathe into the phone.
Just a little bit.
So anyways.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Tilt that shit away from your mouth.
So Adam, sorry. I'm curious. Like people were incredulous that we posted about David Bowie, particularly the guy that I gave a $300 ticket to. Maybe to the younger generation, punk rock isn't artistic expression at all. Maybe to them, punk rock is just a place to go where you can feel safe or feel accepted. And the fundamental point of punk rock to the younger generation is something completely different than what it is for me. And essentially, maybe punk rock for them and me is two entirely different things. Second, and you could respond to this, is it bullshit to rag on us right after we gave you a $300 ticket, or is that par for the course? Is that the punk thing to do?
To answer the second part, there should be an unwritten code here where if someone is giving you a $300 ticket, and not randomly either, mind you, because they, you know, because they legitimately gave it to you on the merit of your sadness, you should probably holster your gun for like at least 48 hours. That would be a gentleman thing to do, you know? But hey, what do I know? All right. I mean, to answer your wider question here, you see, this is the interesting thing is that there are two, I believe there's two entry points for punk rock. And I don't think you're exclusively in one camp or the other, but I think that depending on kind of where you are in life, you might enter into the one and hang out there for a long time. So there is the one read of it where punk rock is freedom. And I think this is where you come in, John, where punk rock is weird. It's wild. It's crazy. Anything could happen. You could go in and, you know, make a band that's just you like screaming into a can about, you know, dogs, and you know, that could be a band, and you could absolutely do that and call it punk rock, and you know, everyone would be like, all right, hey, punk rock can do fucked up shit like that, it's punk rock, I guess. You know, that's the fuck you end of punk rock. It's the, you know, I'm gonna do whatever I want and it's gonna be crazy and the world's just gonna have to either, you know, get used to it or get out of my way. Like, there's that end of punk rock, and that's where you come in. There's the other end of punk rock, which is a little bit of the shelter in the shitstorm end of punk rock. And this is definitely my entry point. Now, I'm not necessarily there anymore. I think I'm more in your territory. But this was my entry point, which was, you know, there was a time when I absolutely hated music as a concept when I was a kid. Like I was not a fan of anything. And if you would have asked me, you know, what do you like? What's your favorite kind of music? I would have legitimately told you when I was in like, you know, like fifth or sixth grade or something like that, like, I don't like music. And the reason was because my exposure to music at the time was either, you know, stuff my mom was listening to in the car. So what, like, I don't know, like Gloria Estefan and the Eagles and stuff like that. Or it was whatever horrible, you know, music was popular. So I've got that on the one end. And on the other end, I've got, you know, all the kids in my schools listening to, God, I don't know, like the New Kids on the Block and the whatever else was popular at the time, right? So I'm looking at this from like two eras of pop music that were totally shit to me. And it didn't seem like there was anything I liked. And when I discovered punk rock and I realized that, hold on, all these people are, you know, they're getting into these things that I don't like over here, but I could go over here and hang out with these weirdos and listen to like Bad Religion. That was a big deal. And that became, you know, the shelter in the storm thing where I could go, hey, you know what, you know, fuck everything. I'm going to go over here and listen to, you know, this angry weirdo music with all these other angry weirdos. And it's saving me from being involved in all that bullshit. And when you're firmly in that camp, it's really hard to look outside of the camp at things that exist in the like rest of music sphere and to pick out things that, you know, maybe merit your attention or don't. So, you know, if I was firmly in that, you know what, I'm into punk rock because everything else sucks and this is the only place where you know, I found my people. It's really hard for you to walk in the door then and say, like, you know, Adam, you know, the Doobie Brothers were amazing songwriters. Cause I'm going to go like, no, I don't care. I don't want to go there. You know, go listen to whatever. That's not where I'm going to be. I'm going to be over here with my people. And I think both of those are kind of valid ways to approach punk as a genre. And I don't think that, but I think that, like, if you're really deep in the, you know, punk rock is saving me from all the bullshit realm, it's tough to have to deal with other stuff being thrown into the mix. And I got to imagine that somewhat drives the attitudes of people that will get all snaky if we post about we'll get all snaky if you, John, post about, say, Bowie or Aerial Pink or whatever, right? And it's, you know, it's interesting. And I feel that dynamic that's very much the right now dynamic about, like, the kind of internet punk people that we know, at least. Like, I feel that, like, years ago, like in the early 2000s, even when punk news was kind of getting started, we still had a different dynamic where you had people that were coming at it more from the, like, old punk rock versus this new punk rock thing. Like, you know, the mall punk versus the 77 stuff. Like, that was still way more of an active dynamic than you hear these days. But at this point, it's sort of like, you know, you're either approaching it from this, like, you know, punk rock's going to be the crazy weird stuff, or, you know, punk rock is going to be stuff that sounds like, you know, Four Chords and the Truth. And, you know, I see those two approaches all the time. And I feel that, like, if you're firmly in the one camp, then the stuff that the other camp is talking about seems crazy. Does that make any sense?
Adam, I am moved by your soliloquy there. I would say that is incredibly insightful, has opened my eyes to a degree, perhaps made me more tolerant, but also a profound statement. I really am moved by you.
Wasn't listening to myself because my cat was kind of, like, murring around my feet, and I'm trying to shoo it away because I'm doing that.
Well,
Adam, and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm saying. All I'm focusing on is the fucking cat.
If I can just kind of add to what Adam said, I mean, you know, I actually went through a period of in my life, my early life, when I had the same experience. You know, I hated everything that was coming out. And when I was a kid, you know, I mean, that was when, like, you know, Blink-182 was out. But it was also this horrible, like, pop music, divas, boy bands, the whole thing. And I also just didn't like music. I remember, like, we'd get these Now CDs, you know, those compilation CDs. And I just hated everything on them. And I just kind of felt like, you know, I just don't like music. And on top of that, which made it worse, honestly. My parents would not let up on the fact that I had to play an instrument, and if I didn't, I wouldn't hear the end of it. And so that was the whole thing too. And that's kind of what drove me to punk rock too. Not only the anger, but, you know what? It was just this rebellious kind of music. And back to David Bowie. I mean, if you know your punk rock history, you'll know, like, he definitely took some stuff from punk rock, and he also was heavily influenced, like John said, on these punk rockers. I mean, you can see old pictures of him and the Clash together hanging out at, I think it's from Live at Shea Stadium album. If you I think there are pictures of them together. He's definitely relevant, and also wasn't he, like, monumental in launching Iggy Pop's solo career?
Very briefly, after the Stooges broke up in Funhouse, Iggy went to England to do a solo album with Bowie, and that's actually kind of before Bowie was even famous. Bowie was actually not on his way to becoming famous, but he wasn't famous yet. And then, basically, they needed a backup band, so Iggy just said, well, let's just bring in the Stooges as our backup band. And so that's how Raw Power got made, with Bowie producing. And then Iggy and Bowie stayed friends through the 70s and 80s. And maybe they're still friends, but together they worked on about 6 or 7 albums total together.
Right, and also I meant instrumental. But so he clearly had – I mean, Raw Power is not – that's not, you know – that's a pretty substantial, that's a pretty big album. So I think it's, important to keep news of him around, in this respect. So I think maybe this person was misguided a little bit, I guess, or just didn't really know.
Well, I will make my argument through song, and I'm going to play one of Bowie's weirder songs. This is off the album Low. I think it's 1977. It's Bowie's Berlin period, which is kind of his darker, more nihilistic, colder period. This track is called Be My Wife. It's 2 minutes long, and if you ask me, it's an extremely punk rock sounding song, or if not punk rock, then it's certainly parallel to punk rock. This is Be My Wife by Bowie, produced by Eno, Robert Fripp, and it's off Low.
We're back on the Punk News Podcast, and there's no good way to be fun about this part of the show. It's a bunch of sad stories about sad things that all unfortunately happened within the last week, I guess, all in like within a couple days. So I don't know. We'll each grab one and you know, let you know about it, because if you haven't heard about these things, they, you know, definitely go check out the artists that are involved, because they've all done some cool stuff, and you know, they deserve your, you know, I guess, thoughts or prayers or what have you. So anyways, the first one here is that Dickie Hammond of Leatherface has passed away. Singer-songwriter and musician had reportedly been in ill health since August of 2014. Dickie had he had played in various UK groups over the time. He was pretty prolific. He was in Leatherface. He was in the Angelic Upstarts. The exact cause of his death hasn't yet been revealed at this point. But he was known to have suffered, you know, various alcohol-related health issues in recent years. Although that's not necessarily, you know, what did him in or anything. But that's something that is known. But anyways, though, so Dickey's been active in bands, you know, since the mid-80s. So he was involved in a bunch of Leatherface records. So he was on 1991's classic Mush. He left the band after that time, and he didn't get back with them until really the late 90s, and then he was part of their second wave of activity. He recorded again on 2010's The Stormy Petrel, and he was with the band then until they broke up in 2012. So, Hammond then had gone. He had played with the Angelic Upstarts, with the Toy Dolls, with Dr. Bison, Generic Hex, the Diplomatics, and the Jones. So he had played with a whole bunch of stuff. So anyways, 50 years old, rest in peace, Leatherface guitarist Dickey Hammond.
Next, we have another really sad story. Definitely a band that the readers love, and I'm talking about Teenage Bottle Rocket. According to a Facebook post from the band's Facebook page, Carlisle? Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah, Carlisle.
Ray Carlisle, his brother and the band's drummer, Brandon Carlisle, they're twins actually, has been hospitalized and is currently in a coma. And the band put out said, "Hi, friends and family. This is a tough one. Here it goes. My brother Brandon is in a coma. His roommate found him yesterday around 11 a.m. and he was unresponsive. The paramedics showed up at his house shortly after, and his heart wasn't beating. They got it going and it gave out again in the ambulance. They got his heart started again and it stopped beating in the ICU unit, where the doctors were able to get his heart going again a third time. The scary part is the swelling to Brandon's brain due to a lack of oxygen and blood flow. His body temperature was 88 degrees when he arrived at the ICU. I'm pretty sure that means my brother was without oxygen for quite a long time. He is currently in a coma, and the doctors are keeping him at about 93 degrees. They will start to bring him back up to normal temperature for the next 12 to 16 hours. Then they will wean him off of his sedatives, and the neurologists will be able to determine whether or not Brandon is still with us. All prayers and thoughts for my brother are greatly appreciated. I know Brandon didn't want this to happen. He's tough as nails, and we are hoping for the best. Looks like we need a miracle. Love to all." Yeah, this has been going all over the place. I know people have been using like the hashtag Hope for Brandon. It's been a tough day on punk news. Guys, do you have anything to say?
That is a harsh story. And it's not an easy thing to read just because there's so much detail there. I mean, that's pretty harrowing, to be in that kind of situation where like someone has, you know, repeated, you know, lack of oxygen to the brain and all that. Like that's pretty fucking serious. So
I mean, and the fact that they were able to resuscitate him three times in you know, I'm assuming a few hours, that's ridiculous. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so there is, and that story, at least at the time we're recording this, and this might completely change by the time this show comes out on Sunday, this is completely up in the air. They're going to have a completely different situation to deal with within like 12 hours. So even by the time that this show comes out, that, you know, make sure you follow up with the story of Brandon Carlisle, because it's going to be tough.
Well, John, we got another tough story, unfortunately. Dr. No, the famed guitar player of the Bad Brains, one of the greatest guitar players of all times, one of the most influential guitar players of all times, perhaps creator of the punk rock breakdown, he was recently put on life support. This was about yesterday, which would have been Tuesday. Now, the details were sparse, understandably so. The reason this broke was because Dean Ween of Ween posted a public message that said Dr. No was on life support. And then, I don't want to say the rumor spread from there, but people were searching for any scrap of information from social media. And we actually kind of held back on posting about this because we weren't sure After Rolling Stone posted something about this, though, it actually kind of brought out more info. It turns out the Dr. No is or was on life support. And the family, Dr. No and his family and his friends, are basically asking for positive thoughts and also for privacy. So they want people like emailing them every 5 seconds to see what's going on, which I understand 100%. And honestly, maybe that's kind of a good idea. Like, I know when the guys from Teenage Bottle Rocket, I know people were like sending them emails and messages every 5 seconds. I'm not saying this is the right or wrong thing to do, but maybe in that kind of situation, maybe lay back and like only email them if you really know them. I don't know. Not to get too personal, but I mean, when you go through tragedy or you're in the middle of tragedy, I don't know if you want people you don't know reaching out to you. I don't know. Adam, do you have any insight on that at all? Or Ricky?
I haven't been in that situation, but I've often – I mean, you think about that.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, maybe just something to think about, you know.
I mean, you think about it all the time when there's a story like this where, you know, you definitely want to be supportive. But at the same point, you know, social media is a pretty weak weak social tie. So, you know, is it really going to help anyone if you're, you know, tweeting them your love throughout their ordeal? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, do you want people that you don't know saying, I'm here for you? Like, I don't know.
I think it comes from a good place.
I don't even know if it does, though, honestly. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, if you're a fan and you just want to do like a thing, because like a, you know, let's say, for example, like a tweet, I mean, it's not like, I don't think it's like a bad thing, but I mean, it's like trying to like find a personal way to say, I hope you feel well, like a really direct way, I think is just kind of intrusive at a certain point.
Right. Well, I don't have an answer to that. Maybe it's something to think about, all you listeners out there. As of right now, Dr. No is still, the last report is Dr. No was still alive and some reports said he was improving, but who knows if that's accurate or not. I would say just keep Dr. No in your thoughts, you know, have the PMA. And what can I say? Hopefully he's still around by the time you hear this, and hopefully he gets better. And hopefully everybody that's sick right now that we're talking about gets better. You know, what can I say? What can I say, you know?
Yeah, so this is a shitty week. This is a shitty group of stories here. So we're going to play you I'm going to play a song by Leatherface. This would have been a song that that Dickie Hammond would have been involved in. He was involved in this record for sure. So we're going to play Not a Day Goes by Leatherface off of their record Mush from – what was Mush from? What a year? 1991. So this one's a few years old here. This band, if you've ever listened to Leatherface – my God, were they influential. Like, if you listen to anything that has taken up that kind of like No Idea record sound, that kind of like, you know, orgcore gruff punk kind of thing, you know, these guys were doing it out of England before, you know, we had that stupid word for it. So anyways, this is Not a Day Goes by Leatherface off of Mush from 1991.
A time when everything was evergreen.
And we're back. All right, let's clear the table. Let's get wacky again. Best wishes to everybody that's sick. No fun about that, but let's have some fun. Good Charlotte, they're back. No, they're back.
Woo!
I know you guys are still so excited about Husker Du releasing t-shirts, but guys, Good Charlotte is back. And not only are they back, they released a clip, a song called Makeshift Love. Adam White, are you excited that perhaps the greatest definition of a mall punk band, Good Charlotte, is back? Are you pumped? Are you excited?
Here's the wonderful thing is that I don't really remember who this band was.
Oh, which is so great.
I definitely remember their name. I remember that they were part of that era of God, I don't even know what you call it, like post Blink 182, early mall emo, mall punk, whatever the fuck, right? I know that they're from that era. I know that I was old enough when they were popular that I could get right up on my high horse and scoff at them. But the amazing thing is that they've receded into history, and like the fog of time has taken out any specific memory of what they did that was so offensive to me. So I just know that I don't like them, but I could not tell you anything that they did. And that's awesome. Right?
You're extremely lucky.
Like they lay no claim on the limited space that's available in my brain. And that's great. That's what all the things that I don't like, because like there's lots of stuff that I don't like, but I know it, like it's in my head. Like there's people I don't like, but they occupy space in my head, and I think about them from time to time. And if you think about it, that means that those fuckers have won because I'm thinking about them, right? But this is one of these things that I did not like at the time, and I don't even remember anything about it. And that's great. That's the ideal situation. So I did because I like suffering, though, went and I listened to the few seconds of the clip that Alternative Press posted this song, and it didn't sound like much of anything to me. It sounded like a bunch of mall punk. So, this band is back. If you like them, I don't really know what to say. I know that, hey, there's some of the punk news staff that for whatever reasons has a soft spot for this band.
Who?
But
name names.
No, I don't want to name names. It's not
It's Ricky, isn't it?
No, fuck you. No way.
So, no. Yes.
I have plenty to fucking say about this. I'll wait my turn.
So like if this is your band and you're super stoked that they're back, like, you know, by all means, let your freak flag fly. Right. But
right in.
Yeah, but for me, like I'm so happy that I don't remember anything about these guys. It's great.
Oh, God.
I'm so happy.
So, for me, I'm just looking at their discography. So when one of their big hits came out, I was like 10. Okay. And this band especially was, you were right about this being this post Blink-182 mall punk thing. These guys, if you look at their like band photos, they look like they're modeling for Hot Topic. But the thing that I found so, I'll say repulsive, I guess, about this band, and it's not necessarily them being super poppy but trying to act all hardcore. It was this, from what I remember, it was this band was had this very forced meshing with their music videos, and I think their style with like early 2000s hip hop and rap. And it just didn't work, and I just found it so cringeworthy, even when I was that young, and I couldn't take it seriously. And I mean, these guys I think are kind of in the same categories, like, you know, like Fall Out Boy, and you know, it was just a weird time for rock music back then, especially right around 2004, 2006, and 5 or whatever. And
was this one of the bands that
God,
where they had a clothing line?
All the bands have clothing lines.
I mean, shit. Travis Barker has his own clothing line. So, I mean.
Yeah. Like all the popular bands from like this certain era, you could always tell who they were because they all had clothing lines that all were basically the same thing, where they would sell like black t-shirts with some word written in like old English.
I would not be surprised. I don't know, but you know, when I think about bands like in the 80s talking about how horrible MTV is, and like this is the band that they're foretelling is going to happen if MTV gets a hold of punk rock. And I think that's what happened here. And there are others, but this is, I just remember looking at this and being like, this is just a fucking mess. Because it felt so forced, and it felt so like, it felt like, you know, these big, I mean, I'm going to sound like it's going to sound like a cliche, but this is what happens when corporate punk rock becomes popular.
John, what's your Good Charlotte memories?
Good Charlotte demonstrates the failing of capitalism. And here's why. Of all, Good Charlotte is aimed at young kids. I mean, maybe now it's aimed at 30-year-olds, but back in the day it was aimed at kids, 14, 15. Of all the wonderful art and mentally stimulating messages, creativity, that you could be giving to the youth, instead, you give them this bland crap. And the kids, because they have impressionable minds, instead of being challenged, instead of being energized, instead of being encouraged to think for themselves, they just listen to this bland, dull stuff and thereby become bland, dull, and boring themselves. Think of the people that you know that really like Nickelback. Are they really interesting people? I'm going to guess not. Capitalism basically says if you can make a buck, then you should make a buck. It is easier to sell Good Charlotte than it is to sell, let me think who's more challenging from this time period. Than it is, well, say Frank Zappa. It's not the same time period. Or
Cro-Mags.
Living Cro-Mags. Or, but I'm thinking of somebody like someone that's like mentally stimulating. Integrity, that's the same period. And the point being this is, because it's easier to sell Good Charlotte, because it's less challenging, that's what sells, that's what the kids are introduced to, and that's what they, you know, that's what shapes them. Under capitalism, that's the way to go, because that's how you make a buck. Under a system which encourages self-improvement and self-betterment rather than devotes glory to earning a profit, Good Charlotte would not be the song, the music that is given to you, something more challenging, something more educational or artistic. So I'm just saying is Good Charlotte, I mean, generally speaking, I'm not on the anti-capitalism angle or the communism angle on the punk rock. I mean, that's not usually my bag, but I got to say, this is some of the collateral damage of capitalism, and it's shameful. It really is.
I just wanted to throw something in there right now. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page of theirs. Their first big album sold 4.9 million copies in 2002 to 2003. So it's not like they didn't make their buck back on this. It's just dumb shit.
I'm saying they made lots of money on it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, now, Well, I am sure that the band that I don't remember here is trash. They do serve some purpose, and I don't know if this is something
social control.
Celebrate.
That's the purpose, Adam. Social control.
No.
Well, they also give, you know, people that actually, you know, like us that actually are more knowledgeable about punk rock to something to, like, you know, rail against. They're basically for us. They're just a verbal target. That's it.
Okay, hold on. No, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. And there's bands that serve as gateway bands, and those bands are useful. Like in my John, when we were kids, it was Green Day.
Gateway band for me. The BMG Music Club was, with one third off box sets, was the gateway.
All right, yes, but for a lot of us in that era, you know. We would have heard, you know, something off of Dookie as our first exposure to punk music. And maybe, you know, that's not to say that, like, you know, what Green Day was the be all and end all of it, because a lot of us used that to later discover The Clash. Right. So like that, you know, I can't completely discount bands for being popular, but I'm pretty sure this band sucks, so I don't want to defend them too much. But, you know,
but what
there is some purpose for these kind of bands.
What if there was no Green Day? What if there was no Good Charlotte and there was only the Clash and more challenging stuff?
How would you find them?
I submit to, like, you, Adam, that people that music is, what's the word I'm looking for? It's an economics term, I can't remember. That people, when presented with a limited number of options, people will gravitate to one of those options, no matter how few those options are. Thus, if we eliminate Good Charlotte, then people will, it's not like there will be less music listeners. They'll just gravitate towards a more challenging, informative music. And perhaps I am being an elitist, but what can I say? This is a bad band.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to have this discussion about this band because
inherent scarcity? Is that what it is? Is that the term? Inherent scarcity? Natural scarcity? Whatever.
I would hope that this isn't a starter band for people. Like, I for me also, I think, you know, later Green Day was for me, but you would think, like, they would find, like, Anti-Flag or something like that more appealing as a starter band than this, because this is very it's very, I remember this band being incredible, like, very superficial. It was all about the look, and it wasn't necessarily about, like, the message girl or anything like that,
like, you know, not to completely dismiss the opinions of 14-year-old girls, but if you're a 14-year-old girl,
I mean, maybe I remember seeing you know, on TV.
Adam, you there?
I'm here. Did we lose Ricky?
Yeah, his phone. Adam, I think you were about to say, if you're a 14-year-old girl, then maybe
this is... If I was a 14-year-old girl, John, I would dance all day and have no worries. I don't remember what I was talking about. I don't want to talk about Good Charlotte anymore. Fuck that. Let's talk about other things.
Let's talk about
your favorite subject here.
Piracy.
Well, and digital music. So, there was an article, John. Do you want to read this one? Or do you want me to do it?
I can do it, sure.
Yeah, you do it. You do it.
Basically, over there's actually been a finding, and actually this is quite interesting. If you recall, we had Scotty Tank Crimes of Tank Crimes Records on about 6 months ago, and he posited the idea that with digital streaming, piracy will go down, but so will sales. And he was right. Basically, Ars Technica basically published a study that was done by the European Commission's Joint Research Center that shows exactly that when Spotify or streaming services are made available in a country, illegal downloads go down, but so does digital music purchases. So basically what it's saying is that the more people listen to Spotify, the fewer digital music sales they buy. However, Spotify does not cause a loss for the recording industry, since the two effects, lower revenue from people buying fewer digital tracks and gains from streaming royalties, more or less cancel out. The question is, will those two things continue to cancel out?
This study actually, it very much mimics what happened with me. Now, I was never heavily buying any digital music off of, say, iTunes, just because the price point of, well, this at the time, of, like, paying 99 cents a song, that didn't have the value for me of, like I'm absolutely cool with paying for music if I'm getting something physical for it, if I'm getting a CD or a record or anything like that. But at 99 cents a song, it never felt like there was value there for me to be buying music off of iTunes. So I was an eMusic subscriber. I don't even know if eMusic is around anymore, but eMusic had these plans where you would get something like 50 songs a month and you would pay whatever, you know, you fixed price a month to download those 50 songs. And it was mostly indie labels that were on there at the time. And it really worked out to, like, it was like 30 or 40 cents a song when you actually did the math. But I was an eMusic subscriber for a long time. So I was physically downloading tracks. And during that time, I amassed this massive pile of MP3s that I then, as a computer person, got really paranoid about losing. So then I had to have all this backups and shit like that. And it never felt it never felt like it was worth what I was getting out of it. And then once now, again, I'm an RDO subscriber, not a Spotify, but I suspect that the math is all the same on their end too. Once I could stream stuff, what that meant is that, well, great, I don't need to amass these files anymore. So I absolutely stopped paying to download music and just started, you know, paying for my streaming subscription. And that's, you know, how I've kind of happily been living. So, you know, if I really give a shit about something, I'm going to go buy the record. But if I just want to preview something, then, you know, the stream works for me. But like I meet this trend line entirely in that, like, it stopped me from going on to, say, like, iTunes and buying music, buying MP3s off of iTunes. So that matches up. I had already stopped, you know, being involved in any kind of piracy stuff by that stage, but definitely that happened. So I do not doubt the findings here at all. The one thing that I'm completely oblivious to, though, because I've been out of it for so long, is I don't know what the music piracy market is like these days. Like I never got into torrenting. That was after my time. So, like, I don't know how many people are out there, you know, downloading the new, you know, War on Women record off of some torrent website instead of buying it. Like, I imagine that's how people get stuff, but like my music piracy days were like original Napster, so I don't know.
I'll never forget. It took like this is before I even knew what a copyright was. It literally took me like 6 hours to download a single No Doubt song. I'll always remember that.
Yeah, so that was the day you had to work for your ill-gotten gains, right? So,
well, actually, not to go off track, but Napster gave me a misconception of the Misfits, because I wanted to learn about the Misfits, so I downloaded a Misfits song, but it was the Monster Mash, you know, new Misfits doing the Monster Mash. And so I thought Misfits were like the new Misfits. So anyways, with regards to this, I'm not a fan of streaming. I have digital tracks, but when I buy digital tracks, I don't feel that I've really gotten anything. With streaming, I'm always concerned that you're essentially renting music. Like, society more and more is renting things and not buying things, and I think that's a large portion of why people have less disposable income and rather fewer savings than they did 20 or 30 years ago. You know, now people have cell phone bills, internet bills, Spotify bills, car radio bills. You know, that all adds up, and I'm very suspicious of it. And also, here's why I'm even more suspicious of it. It used to be that bands made money through radio play, because the radio stations would play governmental license, and then through ASCAP or through BMI, they would distribute the licensing proceeds to the bands on a pro rata share. However, these online services are not governmental, and they're not overseen by the government. So basically, Spotify, RDO, they have very, very, very oppressive agreements with the bands and the music. So essentially, bands get like no money whatsoever from these streams. I've gotten conflicting reports as to whether it's almost no money or it's a little bit of money, but I think it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And the reason that radio stations basically had licenses from the government was, well, A, to control what you could play, which is lame, but B, also so artists would get paid. Now, because these things are so private, and because the companies and the record companies, but also the streaming services, have such clout, bands themselves are getting like no money from it, which is kind of ridiculous. So I'm very nervous about that. And more and more people are like, I love streaming, but the artist is really feeling the brunt of the pain in this issue. I much prefer physical CDs and physical records.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Sorry about that. The internet's been spotty since the weather's been rainy here. I'm with John on this one. I like owning. This is a very interesting finding. I mean, at least it's not. I guess at least it the artists get paid something instead of nothing. But I mean, for me, I really don't like this. I don't like renting, having to rent stuff or lease stuff. I'm much more about owning. The fact that these big companies have the power to just take something down right away without really telling anyone, is a little bit nerve. It makes me a little bit nervous. That's why
you're
I'm much
bummed
rather
about losing
just
all your victory records tracks last weekend.
yeah, exactly. But you know, I don't want to have to be at the mercy of these guys, and that's, and also I feel good about, you know, actually holding vinyl, and you know what, if and the best case scenario, there's a free download card in there, which is great, and I'm more than happy to do that.
You know what? I want to get.
But
someone.
Yeah, I am sitting out the whole streaming situation for now.
You know what? We are not the right person people to discuss the issue at hand here. I mean, like it's repeating what we've said a million times to say that, like, you know, John and Ricky like records better than streams. what I want to hear here is someone write us in podcast@punknews.org. I want to talk to someone that is like that you consume your music via piracy at this point. Like that you consume your shit from torrents. I don't want to admonish you or anything like that. Like, I want to know about how your world works.
Yeah, yeah. We promise we won't yell at you if you write in.
Because, like, I completely understood the, you know, the early rush where you were like, you know, holy shit, I can get access to all sorts of stuff. I remember like one of the first things that I was using Napster for was grabbing like rancid B-sides that I had never heard, right? So, like, you know, those, I totally get why that can be super appealing. But I mean, even like given that you do have the option now, like whether Ricky and John like it or not, but you do have the option now to pay $10 a month to basically listen to whatever you want. And, you know, while you're not really helping anyone, you're not exactly stealing from them at this point either. So why do you continue to do that? I want someone to write in and tell us, because I'm actually interested in the answer.
I should ask my old roommate from 5 or 6 years ago. That guy loves torrenting. That guy torrents shit all day long. But write in. I went. Good point, Adam. Excellent point. podcast@punknews.org.
Yeah. So do that. That's what we want to know. Ricky, play yes. us a song before your internet explodes.
Yeah. So this song is called "Can't Stay." It's by you can call them local. They're an LA band called True Rivals. This song is off their album The Revenant from 2014. I believe they are not signed. I think this was a completely DIY recorded album. I saw them play in a small bar, and then I saw them at Hi-Fi Rock Fest in Long Beach a few months ago. I'm like, oh, I remember them, and they were really cool to me and Stevie, the new Punk News editor. Her husband, John, was there. He was taking pictures with Denise from Punk World Views, and they were all really cool to us. They got us backstage, and they were cool to hang out with for a little bit. So I thought I'd play a song. Again, the song is called "Can't Stay." It's off True Rivals' album, The Revenant. You can check them out at truerivals.net. They're on Facebook. I believe they're on Twitter and Instagram. So yeah, here's "Can't Stay" by True Rivals.
we're back. We have one last story that we want to talk about this week. One that shocked, I don't know, me. I don't know if it shocked the world. Yeah. But Ricky, tell the people what happened with Brooks.
So, as you guys may recall, Brooks Wackerman recently left Bad Religion and has now joined Avenged Sevenfold, arguably another mall punk band. According to a recent interview, the band had been contemplating drafting Brooks for some time. Avenged Sevenfold frontman M. Shadows, oh my God, said in the interview, Jesus Christ, oh God, okay. To be honest, Brooks' name has always been in the mix. It was one of the names we were throwing around when their original drummer James Sullivan passed away, in terms of who was going to step up for, I guess, an upcoming album called Nightmare. We felt Mike was the right choice, and we feel still that way. Mike destroyed on that record. He was perfect, but at the time, our tour manager brought up Brooks' name as well. But at the time, he was also with Bad Religion, and it was also people were going to look at it differently because he was a punk drummer at this point. So how do you guys? I mean, this was kind of crazy. I was pretty shocked that he left Bad Religion at all. I guess his last show, It's Not Dead Fest. How do you guys feel? Maybe seeing him in eyeshadow next time you see him in a live video.
What makes this funny to me is, and I may be misremembering what actually happened here, and this may have just been in jest and I'm making too much of it, but I got to tell the story, was that one of the last times when I was at a Warped Tour was, I feel like it was during the year when the year, the 2 years, where there was a lot of tension between the new school metalcore-y and whatever bands and the old punk bands that would always be playing Warped Tour. And this was during the era when, like, you know, like, no, when NoFX spent the whole summer throwing shit at Under Oath, that era. Well, during that time, we saw one of those years, we saw Bad Religion play, and it was at the same Warped date when Avenged Sevenfold played. And Bad Religion had the last set of the evening, and I don't remember if this was in Buffalo or Toronto, but it may have been in Toronto. Bad Religion had the last set of the evening, and right before them was Avenged Sevenfold. And Avenged Sevenfold played to, like, a teeming crowd of everyone going crazy, and then a lot of that crowd just cleared the shit out, and then Bad Religion came on. And there was definitely a... there was definitely a bit of a generation tension happening during this time. But I remember that Greg gets on stage and his first comment after Avenged finishes is just like, "Ooh, wasn't that spooky, everyone?" And just like there was a lot of talk. There was a lot of banter during Bad Religion set about how spooky everything was from Avenged Sevenfold. And there was a lot of it may have been good fun, and I'm reading too much into it, but there seemed like there was a lot of chucking at that other band's goofy ass image, and Brooks was absolutely playing in Bad Religion at the time, so just to see him leave Bad Religion and then end up in Avenged Sevenfold for me is hilarious. Again, I don't know. These guys might all actually just be friends and hang out all the time, and that was just stage banter. But to me, it was funny.
I mean, from what I read, I think I read in either the Punk News Facebook art Facebook comments or on there. Apparently, he was originally a metal drummer. But I mean, people, especially on the Facebook page, are going crazy. No one's liking this at all. And I mean, do you think this is just like, you think he's just getting a better payday here with this band?
I got to imagine that like Avenged Sevenfold makes a shit ton of money, and you know, that's just the way that, you know, that's the way the world works. It's one of those bands, like, we've all written off as being, you know, not authentic enough for us or whatever punk rock reason we have. But you know, to the rest of the world, you know, they make an absolute gob of money. So, yeah. You know, that's probably the case. I mean, the other thing too, and I guess like you gotta really look at the guy's career. I mean, like, yeah, Brooks played he played on the Suicidal Tendencies records, Freedom, and then Free Your Soul, Save Your Mind. There might have been another he was on. So he was from that world for sure. But it's not like he's had like the world's most, you know, virtuous, you know, amount of bands that he's been involved in. Like he worked with fucking Korn at one point. He was on an Avril Lavigne record in 2004.
Oh,
so you know, he's not Ian McKay.
Okay.
What I was going to say. Well, first of all, I do want to read some of these comments, and me reading these comments isn't me agreeing with them. It's actually my browser's free. So let me give my peace of mind first. It's not like Brooks. It's not like Bad Religion is Brooks' band. He joined in what, 2000 or something?
Yeah. Would have been for Process of Belief. So 2000, 2001.
So Bad Religion already been a band for like 17 years. You know, so it's not like it's his band. It's a band that he drums for. I'm sure he felt a part of the band, but he's not the guy calling the shots. He's not the guy making the creative decisions, right? It's not like Bad. And to my surprise, well, not to my surprise, but I didn't know this. According to one of our readers, and I believe it, or they're probably kind of close, Bad Religion does about 1,000 to 2,000 people per night, where Avenged Sevenfold does 5,000 to 10,000 people per night, and their tickets are more expensive, which I believe, because they're kind of a mallcore band, kind of a heavy metal band. Those tickets tend to be more expensive. Also, Avenged Sevenfold does tour. I mean, I'm not a fan of the band. They tour a lot, whereas Bad Religion doesn't tour hardly at all, so... The guy needs to make a living, you know, and if somebody said to me, you know, we can quintuple your income, literally, and you have to do some relatively inoffensive work for us, would you do it? You know, you got to be a man. You'd be like, listen, I got to support my family. You know, playing in Bad Religion's fun, but, you know, if I play in Bad Religion, I'm being selfish to a degree because my family's suffering because I want to be in a, quote, cool punk band when I could make way more money in this shitty band. I mean, what do I care? You know, he's kind of a hired gun. So, I mean, I can't fault him for joining Avenged Sevenfold. Sure, they're a crappy band, but, you know, he's making a buck. Here's my question. Do you guys think he likes Avenged Sevenfold? Or do you think he's like, I'm a hired gun. I'm going to get up there and just do it. Second question is, do you think he sees himself as a hired gun and that he's like, it doesn't even matter if he likes a band or not, but he sees himself more as a drummer that is good at drumming, so no matter what he's going to say, people are hiring me to drum, so I'm going to do the best possible drumming job I can do because I'm a drummer and that's what I'm good at. Like, you think that the actual band comes into the equation whatsoever? Or do you think he's up there and he's like ashamed to be up there, but he's like, you know what, I just gotta clench my jaw and muscle through this and make money for my family? Or do you think he's a fan of the band? You know.
Well, here's the thing. I think one, I mean, if he can be touring with this band, I'm assuming for a lot of the year, to put yourself in a position where you have to play songs you hate every night for how much money, eventually it's going to get old and you're just going to want to go, you're going to go, you know, insane. I did not know he was on the Avril Lavigne CD. So, an Avril Lavigne album. So, you know what? I think he sees himself as a hired gun. I think they brought him up as a hired gun.
Yeah, but Ricky, think of it this way, though. Like, let's say you had a family, and the only way you could feed your family was by working at McDonald's flipping hamburgers. You could do that, okay. Right?
Right, yeah.
So what would you rather do, flip hamburgers or drum for a shitty band? I'd rather drum for a shitty band.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I don't think he would go – I think his perspective is, you know what? I'm a drummer. I'm a great drummer. People hire me to do great drumming. That's what I'm going to do. And the actual music doesn't even enter the band itself doesn't even really enter into the equation. He's like, people are hiring me for a service, and I'm going to do the best service that I can do.
I think to a certain extent you're right, but I think also, you know, when you're in a band, you have to be able to feel the chemistry. And so when you're a hired gun, that also is a factor. If you don't have chemistry with the other musicians, then it's just not going to work. It'll just be kind of awkward.
I don't know if that's true, that especially for a band like this where their songs are relatively generic. Like for this band, he probably drums to a backing track. So he's just up there, you know, ABC, well, not ABC, but bat, bat, bing, bat, bat, bing, bat, bat, bing. You know, like I don't know if there is chemistry in a band like this. I mean, for example, like Paul McCartney. Is there chemistry between Paul McCartney and the musicians he's up there with now? I don't know.
I think so. I really do. I think he, and also I think Paul McCartney is smart enough to kind of realize, like, you know, I feel ridiculous saying this, but it's true. You know, you got to be able to feel like you got to get the good, like a vibe from that everyone is in, and everyone has to be a team player. And if someone isn't, then they're going to have to either leave and they're going to have to find someone else. So obviously there had to have been some kind of chemistry with this band. For it to work out, or else I think this band's smart enough that they would have passed on him. What will be interesting, though, is who replaces him in Bad Religion. And I'm hoping they kind of bring in someone, an unknown, but who knows who. Maybe they'll find another famous hired gun kind of drummer.
Maybe they'll bring in Max Weinstein or whatever his name is.
We should get Mikey Erg.
Jokes we made last week and Ricky wasn't on the podcast. Look at this. So yeah, John, earlier you gave a list of like 45 options in a multiple choice about what motivation that Brooks has in his life. So I want to answer that part of the question and say I would say A, B, and F.
Daring choice.
Yes. So there you go. So, John, you want to play a song so we can get out of here?
Yeah, the podcast ran a little longer, but that's all right, man. I mean, we had a lot of heavy topics to talk about, some funny stuff too. Listen, I had a minor freak out when I saw that this CD was released. I really did. There's a band called Suburban Lawns. Almost nobody knows about them. The only reason I know about them is because I saw an interview with Fat Mike, Bill Stevenson, and Brennan Kelly. And during the interview, while Brennan Kelly is talking, Fat Mike speaks to the side to Bill Stevenson and said, "Oh, I checked out this band, Suburban Lawns. It was amazing." And I'm like, "Wow!" I'm like, "I should look." So just that one offhand comment, I looked it up. I found this amazing, amazing band called Suburban Lawns. I don't know. I think they actually came before the Descendants song, but the Suburban Lawns is a weird art punk LA group, and they put out one album and one EP, and like, you know, the more punk rock you listen to and the older you get, you still get music that blows your mind, but it comes, you know, when you first get into punk rock, you know, the Sex Pistols blow your mind, the Clash blows your mind, Crass blows your mind, like everything blows your mind. But the older you get, the less stuff, you know, really surprise, you might like stuff, but the less stuff that just completely blows your mind. I saw this band, Suburban Lawns, they've got a video called Janitor. I couldn't believe how amazing this sound. I don't want to overspeak it, but it's like weird punk new wave. You listen to the lyrics of this song, Janitor. I'm just going to read the lyrics. I think these are some of the coolest lyrics I've ever heard. The lyrics are to the song. Well, while I'm trying to pull up the stupid lyrics, the album and the EP just got re-released. You should check it out. You can get it for relatively cheap. I'm going to play the song, Janitor. And this is off the Suburban Lawns re-release of their album. And the lyrics are, "All action is reaction, contraction, man the manipulator, I'm a janitor, oh my genitals, I'm a janitor, oh my genitals, underwater, doesn't matter, antimatter, nuclear reaction, boom, 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 boom." And I don't even know what that means exactly, but I just love the phrasing. It's so weird, and there seems to be a connection there, and I'm not sure what it is. I love this band. I highly recommend checking out this band. I'm so happy this got re-released. It's from 1981, I think, 1980. And this is just a gem of a record that nobody knows about. It is a classic. It's the Suburban Lawns doing Janitor.
Oh,
Leave it there.
Oh, and the podcast?
Yeah.